Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by my co-hosts, Brian Brushwood.
Yes, the ghost of Brian Brushwood. And also the body of Brian Brushwood. They're both here simultaneously.
And our permanent co-host, Bryce Castillo, despite whatever you may think you know.
That's a dangerous precedent that human bodies still have ghosts in them before they die.
I mean, isn't that the idea, right?
I saw a ghost. Also, the body in holding the ghost.
A ghost is just a soul that's died.
Yeah.
I mean, right. When does it become the give up the ghost? When does the ghost begin? You know? No.
The Holy Ghost?
That was sort of an interesting thing. If you go back and you watch, like, I think The Haunting of Hell House, I think that was it, where the premise there was these paranormal researchers go to this house where all sorts of spooky phenomena take place, and they were there to answer a very important question. And this, again, is from the 1970s sort of point of view, and the question they were trying to answer was, we know, they're like, ghosts are real. Yeah, we know that. That's for sure. The question is, are they the proof of life after death? Are they the consciousness of the deceased, or is it just like psychic energy that still sticks around?
Yeah, that was one of the, I remember, you know, when I was 14 years old going through a supernatural phase, reading all the books. And I remember the first time that I read a book where it's like, yes, of course ghosts are real. And that exact conundrum. And I was like, ooh, that makes sense. It could be just a psychic imprint. I got those. Do you remember those Time Life books of the supernatural?
Oh yeah. The awesome covers.
I got all, in fact, I think I have three of them downstairs in my closet still.
Oh wow.
They were pseudoscientific time bombs, man. They were the best and they looked awesome. The layouts were great. They were good.
So years ago, Brian and I were invited in to audition for a show. They're a paranormal research show. And
this is one of the very first times we ever met in person, because we met at in Vegas like 20 minutes before that meeting.
Yeah. I mean, we'd been doing the show for years, but
Yeah, but
in person, yeah.
I think it might have been before Weird Things.
No, this is way after Weird Things. We'd been doing Weird Things.
Man, I'll have to double check on that, because I remember it being one of the first times we met in person, and I remember being impressed that, and I knew we were going to be friends, because one of the first things you did was point behind me and then steal my fries. And then you did it again. And then, like, the third time, I'm like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And then with a mouthful of fries, you're like, scam school. And I was like, we're going to get along just fine.
So we were at this audition, and I think I showed up first. And I walk into a room, and there are some other people who'd been on these other paranormal shows. And there was a conversation about Bigfoot, right? I'm like, I like Bigfoot. I'm in a Bigfoot. This is great. The discussion in the room was Bigfoot, UFO. Was trying to remember UFOs or UFOs. Okay, we're oh no, I think we mean UFOs. Were they government? Because there was a Bigfoot connection. But this was about UFOs. Were they? Because I had a similar conversation about Bigfoot, which has crossed my mind too, about the same craze. This was about UFOs. Like, were they alien visitors? B, secret government research projects. Okay. C, interdimensional travelers. That was the three things. That was the debate of what the three were.
Well,
right?
And there and was like, no other watching. Option.
Then somebody goes, well, there is a fourth option. And I'm like, thank God the voice of sanity is about to speak. All right. And I'm like, tell them the fourth option. Time travelers.
I mean, they're not wrong. Those are possibilities.
There's another pause. There's a guy. There's another pause you guys ever considered. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, Andrew, what do you think? like I'm in the wrong room.
Yeah, man, that was a crazy time because they had this show all figured out, like Discovery or whatever channel, whatever channel we auditioned with, like they had the show format figured out, mm-hmm. and they were going to move into the supernatural space, and they were going to do the thing of like, let's have a skeptic and a believer, or whatever. And the audition that we were showing up to, they called it basically a chemistry test. They just wanted people to hang out, talk to each other, maybe, you know, have discussions. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I don't think they knew that Andrew and I were already friends. And so it's like, you know, we're hanging out, and boy, we were just clicking like crazy.
So
spinning around on chairs.
I saw the list that they had of the pairings they were doing, of the groups of people, because they're pairing like groups of three and four. And they were trying to do typical, like, well, I have maybe one skeptic, one this, whatever, like this. And I go up to the guys doing the pairings, who I now know, by the way, is a member of the Magic Castle, by the way, but I was working as an assistant back then. I go up and I see the pairing and said, hey, is there any sort of order to this or whatever? Like how they're doing? I'm like, no, I'm like, I'm going to give you a suggestion here. That guy, Brian, me, pair us together with these other people. Just give this a shot. He's like, really? Like, yeah, yeah. Just see what happens. We go up, we're paired, we're bouncing off of each other, we're interacting with us, whatever. And it was great. It was the energy full. And they're like, and the people behind the camera were like, wow, this is really good. We get the callbacks like, yeah, you guys were great. That was a great, you know, like whose idea was it to pair them? And I didn't say anything. Yeah. I just went in and redid the list because, you know, and then it was, that show ended up not happening. But
that
was fun.
That was a fun who's who. Cause I remember Dr. Richard Weissman was there, yep. who's done amazing. His book, The Luck Factor, is still one of my favorite books. It's a scientific research into the nature of luck. And it depends on how you define it, but luck is a thing. And there are a set of behaviors that determine how lucky you can be. Oh, and the last part of the book, he takes unlucky people, tells them to emulate, like, do these things. These are the things lucky people do. And then they saw, you know, self-reported, massive turnaround in their luck. And there's more to it. I know it sounds like I'm describing a pseudoscience. And then
magic,
also
magic drill, got it.
One of the guys from Smash Lab. And mm-hmm. I remember you guys talking, you were asking, like, why on earth did you work with fiberglass on that one experiment? And the guys, like both of you had a 1,000-yard stare of what it was like to work with fiberglass.
Yeah, it was just this. Yeah, there was like, I'm like, because the production on that it was an interesting project. And, you know, understanding there's, you know, I was, yeah. But it was a very interesting experience. But that was just funny. And just a little point of advice out there to people is sometimes you go into situations like that. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to say, speak up. What if we do this? What if we do that? You know, and they might be like, nope, dumb idea, go away. Fine. But I found more often than not, what is this over here? Can I be part of this? What's going on over here? And I've gotten myself into, you know, we got that much closer to that project happening, for better or for worse, because of the fact that it was just like, oh, what's this list? What if I put these two names here? Is that cool? Sure. Okay. Why not? You know?
Well, and that's to take it back to the luck factor. That's one of the things. There's three sections. First, he has everybody, who participate in the experiment, self-identify as either lucky or unlucky. And he asks questions like, okay, why do you think you're lucky? And they're like, oh, because I won the lottery. And it's like, oh, that's cool. He goes twice. And they're like, you know, and you, why do you think you're unlucky? It's like, oh, well, I was in a car crash. You're like, oh, okay. And you're like, and then the ambulance I was in a car crash on the way to the.
It's not a single, because anybody could be the one out of a certain set of probability, but it's being in a selected set multiple times.
Sure. So, and then that was the first thing you figured out is that he gave a bunch of scenarios that were ambiguous and he asked people to describe, do you consider this to be lucky or unlucky? One of the scenarios is, imagine you're in line at the bank. You're like four people back in line. All of a sudden, someone kicks in the door. They have a mask. They said, this is a robbery. There's a tussle with the security guard. A gun goes off, and you get shot in the arm. It's not life-threatening. It certainly doesn't feel good. But the bank feels so bad. They're like, man, we're really bummed with how this worked. Please have $5,000. And so the people who self-identified as lucky, they're like, oh, wait, let me get this straight. All I'm doing is going to the bank. And I walk away with an amazing story, a scar with a tail for life, and $5,000. Pretty sure it's lucky. That could have gone way worse, mm-hmm. and that, on balance, is pretty great. Meanwhile, the people who self-identified as unlucky said, let me get this straight. I'm minding my own business at the bank, and I get shot. Pretty sure that's unlucky. Huh. And so there's a self-selection bias.
It's like a good luck, bad luck. Similar. No, it's exactly good luck, bad luck. Yeah.
Correct, right? Yeah. But it's the lens through which you see that stuff. But then the second factor was they were like, well, what are the behaviors of lucky people? How do they differ? So they found out stuff like lucky people tend to strike up conversations all the time with everybody around them, which is why they have so many fortuitous coincidences. Oh, I can't believe you're a casting agent and I'm an aspiring actor. That's how lucky, you know. Right. But basically, mm-hmm. without even knowing it, you're doing it. Also, lucky people tend to have kind of this low-grade radar for opportunity at all times. One of the experiments they did was they set up an appointment and they left like a 10-pound note, and the lucky people tended to find the 10-pound note. The unlucky people walked right past it. Mm-hmm. And in a wonderful twist, one of the unlucky people, before the experiment began, somebody else found it. And so he actually was unlucky. And then the last thing is like, you know, if you are unlucky, can you adopt the behaviors of lucky people, including being chatty, always looking for opportunity? Oh, another experiment they did was they gave someone a magazine. They say, hey, do me a favor, count how many photographs are in this magazine. And the unlucky people went through and they finished. They're like 42. That's exactly how many. They're like, okay. Whereas the lucky people would get halfway through and they would stop. And because they would see a half page advertisement that just read, stop counting the photos. There are 42 of them. Report that you found this and win $1,000. And so, and so lucky people just had that. They're like, Oh, do I win? And they're like, no, that's psych, but good on you for finding that.
Yeah.
but anyway, it's fascinating stuff. And I think that that's a good example of what you're talking about, Andrew. It's like, you know, that is a neutral thing. There happens to be names on a list. A lucky person would think, I mean, do they care what the order is? Let's at least ask and see if there's a way to set ourselves up for success.
There's also the adage of what is it? Luck is opportunity and preparedness.
Yeah, that's right. Preparedness meets opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that is advantageous to people who take more at bats or are more type A.
I have so many things in my life. I know that, like, I can think of, like, you know, I got to go watch the Simpsons table screening, table reading. Right?
Oh my That's God.
Awesome. You know, sat 4 feet away from the actresses are doing this, right? Got to go watch the whole, you know, whole table read, whatever, all this sort of stuff. And that came out because I was at the Magic Castle, which is lucky. And I was talking to a guy. I just saw somebody there, like I saw before. I'm like, hey, how are you doing? I didn't no idea who he was. I kind of maybe had an idea who he was, but I kind of knew he was one of the original Simpsons writer, directors, whatever. And then talked to him, whatever, and blah, blah, blah. So do you want to go to a screening? Go to a reading? I'm like, yeah, sounds great. You know, next thing you know, boom, I'm at a reading for blah, 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 this, because it's just, hey, how are you? No agenda, just talking to somebody. So much I know. I'm lucky to know people like Matt Ridley and some other people because I was at a conference and there was a guy there sitting by himself and I was one of the organizers. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go just talk to this guy just because I just want this person to have fun and feel engaged. And I went over and talked to him and he was, you know, he was about to come over and join our party that we were anyways, just to say hello. But I went out of my way, like, hey, how are you doing? What and not? He's like, oh, you're really cool. Thanks for doing that. Here's this thing I do every year. I bring a bunch of cool people off to my ranch in, you know, Yellowstone. Oh, cool. Next thing you know, I'm in an entirely different world. And through there, I've met, like, you know, people like Peter Thiel and just insane opportunities because I'm like, hey, you want to join us? You know, and you never know.
I'm reading the book Social Engineering right now. And one of the examples that the author gives is, you know, you could say, you know, again, it comes down to quote unquote lucky. There was a exclusive VIP party happening at CES that only the biggest of the biggest had entry to. And he was just like, well, let me just see what would happen if I show up. Maybe there's an opening or a window or whatever. Turns out he didn't even have to do anything fancy because he, by virtue of showing up, because again, luck, an unlucky person wouldn't even bother to show up. Why? Because there's no way they're going to get in. Whereas a lucky person would think, you know what? I'll show up. You know, sometimes you get lucky and who knows. And so as a result of showing up, he happened to be just hanging out by the booth, making small talk with the person taking the badges. And Linus Torvalds walks up, founder of Linux, right?
Linux, yeah.
And then the guy happened to have a Windows plush toy on him, and he was just like, oh, this would be funny. He was like, hey, would you mind signing my Windows plush toy? So he got Linus Torvalds to sign the plush toy, and you know, they made, you know, maybe two sentences of small talk, and then he says, hey, I'll see you inside at the party. That's all he said. He didn't. He didn't pull any strings. He didn't do anything. Just Linus Torvalds in front of him said, in front of the receptionist said, "I'll see you at the party." Mm-hmm. Receptionist just, you know, what do you do next? You hand over two VIP passes to get into the party.
Wow,
sounds like very bad security on behalf of Mr. Linus Torvalds. You know.
Yes, and
it was a security officer's bad luck day.
You disguised a threat as a potential, you know, interesting. A lot to be thought about there. Hey, you know it's scary?
Goblins?
Yes, yes, goblins are scary. You know what else is scary?
Chupacabras?
Chupacabras are scary. Chupacabras are scary.
Frankensteins?
Oh, the worst. I mean, what, the doctor or the monster?
Both. Yeah, both, man. Which, okay. By the way,
and physically.
I have we discussed this? I mean, technically, the monster is his creation, which if he had a last name, it would also be Frankenstein, right?
I mean, is that always the case? People drive like Musks or do they drive Teslas?
Is it a person? Well, when you create a person, traditionally, that person is born.
I mean, the reason he was run out of town was because he was considered a monster.
I would say he's a semi-sentient.
Have you ever had stitches?
Oh, sure.
Brian?
Yeah.
Or did you take on the name of your doctor? I'm Brian Osakawa now. It's just the way it works. You made me. Doctor.
He's cobbled together out of spare parts and given life.
Yeah, you say that too.
I saw that drone injury.
I saw that. I say they're both Frankenstein, but anyway.
Right. Turns out Brushwood is the name of Brian's mom's obstetrician. So, very weird custom.
It's not the same. He didn't make it. It's fine.
I mean,
maybe he did.
Maybe.
Yeah. My dad's not my real dad.
We're trying to find out.
Yeah. So what else is scary?
Let's see. Tigers, snakes.
Snakes.
How about the G word? Ghost? Are ghosts scary to you?
I was just like,
different thing.
Gatsby's? yes.
Ghosts are scary.
Ghosts are scary.
Okay, now what's funny? What's funny? Think of like classic comedy. Who's funny classic comedy?
Charlie Chaplin.
Ghost Dad. Okay. Oh, Charlie Chaplin, sure.
Comedy duos.
You got, I guess the Three Stooges is a trio with a constantly rotating third.
That Sacha Baron Cohen guy, Borat, my wife. Borat boys, my wife.
How about Laurel? Stan Laurel, Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy, sure.
Laurel. Funny.
Laurel was in Scooby-Doo. They used to bust ghosts. Remember there was that season of Scooby-Doo where it's like there was always a celebrity guest, and then they met up with Laurel and Hardy for one episode?
Well, so Laurel, funny, right? What about a ghost Laurel, ghost Stan Laurel?
Oh my gosh. Oh. So which way does the So you're walking around the corner and you see an apparition and you go, a ghost, and you're scared. But then he starts doing pratfalls and arguing off screen with a co-host or something.
A co-ghost.
A co-ghost.
I'm just imagining a ghost slipping on like a ghostly banana.
Which one was forgive me for ghost body typing, but was Laurel the tall skinny one or the shorter more rotund one?
Laurel is a tall skinny one.
Oh man, I think it would be funnier if it was Hardy. Because Hardy would just constantly be flummoxed and angry, barking at someone who's not there.
But that sounds like an angry... I don't know that I would laugh at that ghost. That ghost might be scary.
Yeah, that's a good point. Whereas Laurel, he's confused and he's just like, Ollie, where's my... where's the wiper blades?
The classic wiper blade.
This is from the Daily Mail, very reputable scientific research journal. Is this the ghost of Stan Laurel? And then a photo. Paranormal investigator claims he spotted specter of comedy legend in derelict cinema. A ghost hunter claims he spotted the apparition of comedy icon Stan Laurel at a rundown cinema and says he's got the photographic evidence to prove it. Mickey Vermuch, great name, captured the image at the derelict King's Theater in Bishop Auckland, Co-Durham. The paranormal investigator also claims he had a conversation with a former silent movie star Wait, you said he was a silent movie star.
No, he was formerly silent. Formerly. He just started talking. he gave up being silent.
One half of the legendary comedy duo Laurel and Hardy. Stan Laurel was walking alongside me, he told the Daily Star Online. The ghost hunter described Stan's voice as gentle and claimed the comic smelled of Macassar oil, a hairstyling product popular in Victorian times. He said, Stan said he was at peace and told me this is where I had my happy times. This is where I belong.
Oh yeah.
He showed himself to me because he wants the world to know he's around.
Okay, this is the equivalent of me dying and showing up not to visit my family or even the bars where we shot Scam School, but to go to the
just
computers.
To get attention.
I would go to the computers where people watched Scam School and say, "This is where I'm at peace. This is where you watched Scam School.
Remember me. I'm okay."
Oh, yeah.
So we've got a photo of Laurel here. This is
Brace yourself, Brian.
I'm ready.
All right, so this is...
Oh, I was about to say, that's an astonishing ghost photo.
I believe it. I believe it. Oh, wait, no, that's just a photo of Stan.
And here's the ghost photo.
Wow.
Huh.
Okay. To the credit of the ghost photo, it does look like the body of a person. And if I was going to... It looks to me like there's two orbs, which traditionally are places where a flash will reflect or whatever. But
they're kind of they look like
hands.
Fists,
yeah, like they look like fists off to the side, or maybe open hands at a weird angle. And the face, man, I would sooner say that looks like French scientist Michel Eugène Chevreul. That's the creator. Go ahead and look up Michel Eugène Chevreul and tell me if he looks closer to that or to Stan Laurel.
Michel Eugène, what was the last name?
Chevreul, Chevreul. Chevreul is creator of Chevreul's Pendulum.
I don't know.
Okay, wow. I meant the one in the upper left. That one right there.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah,
no,
Bryce,
no, no.
Born
one.
Old.
He does look a bit. It's like he's got a bunch of. Well, okay, maybe not. I mean, I'm going to say that's as close as Stan Laurel.
Yeah, it looks like. I mean, it's the pareidolia. That's where you see faces and things that aren't there. Is like. It's you know, your body's added in the details and that, and it's like.
I'm looking at it. Both kind of closer here on the monitor, and it's really hard to make anything out with the grain. And then when you kind of see it a little further away, a little smaller, you think you can kind of make out.
You see,
like,
Marilyn Monroe's face.
It vaguely looks like Einstein. A robed figure with his hands kind of on. He looks kind of beatific or slightly annoyed, maybe constipated.
Oh, maybe he's like mid-stomp, like a classic, like, oh,
or he's about midway through performing the Balducci levitation. He's got his arms out.
It's about right. He's like he's holding two ski poles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but this is different. Normally, the stories that you have with ghost photography are, I felt a presence. I took a picture. After the fact, I looked, and I guess there was a ghost.
But this was, he did an Aaron Sorkin walk and talk with me.
Yeah. He
told me stuff.
And then at the end, he was just like, quick selfie.
That he made contact with Elizabeth Taylor. You know, and I would say that they're prone to such extraordinary situations.
I mean, maybe they're just lucky. Brought back full circle.
Okay, yeah.
Unlucky people don't believe in ghosts. That's why you never meet one. Yeah, Knotts in the chat says he looks a little Lincoln-ish. And so this is the thing. It's like, in my experience, if you can't tell if it's Lincoln or Laurel or Chevreul, it's probably none of the above.
He looks like one of those low poly characters from like a Silent Hill game, like the old PlayStation Silent Hill game with the like three vertices head.
It is a pretty good EVP photo. It's very noisy. You can see lots of JPEG compression all over it that I think is helping to spell out the face. And turn the orbs into fists. Like that one on the right, he looks like he's got a bald fist and is about to punch someone.
Yeah.
Which seems very not Stan Laurel to me.
And it almost looks like he's like there's a badge or a like a medallion, maybe.
He's a whiskey ghost sommelier. Police.
Yeah.
He's into spirits.
Oh, God.
No. Ooh.
No.
Okay.
Ooh. Gentlemen. We talked about this before, but I thought we could bring it up a little bit again. I think I was here when we to talk about the plan to look at this, but Oumuamu.
Are we I could chant too. Klaatu Vrata Niktu.
Hold on. I'm going to get the pronunciation here. Shut up.
Oumuamua. One more time?
Oumuamua.
Oumuamua. That's what my daughter says when she's still hungry. She says, Oumuamua.
It sounds like you make a kissy face to a baby. Oumuamua.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, well, this could be the kiss of your destructor. That was, remember the strange object that entered our solar system? And we're like, ha ha, aliens. And they're like, yeah, it's not, right? It's not.
Is right. that the big
the tube
shape?
Yeah, the big tube shaped. Definitely not a foreign. Foreign. That's it. You know what?
Need a space wall, Brian.
They are foreigners. This is why we have no protection against extraterrestrials coming across our Oort space cloud.
Space wall. that was the cigar shaped thing that entered our solar system. Like, and it was like, and yeah, you read as much sci-fi as we do. We're like, this is like how one third of all alien invasion stories begin.
Yeah. Yeah. Is everybody saying like, we don't know what it is. The only thing we know is it's not from around here.
Yeah. That it appears to have come from an entirely different solar system, which would be the first example of an extrasolar object we've observed.
We're living the first act.
In our solar system.
We're living the first act of Independence Day.
Yeah, first act of Independence Day, first act of Rendezvous with Rama, first act of Footfall, first act of every story that does not turn out well for 90% of the humanity. So anyhow, that was what was sort of like kind of creepy, weird, and like, well, I wonder what's going on there. But it was like, you know, space is big and filled with interesting stuff. So there had been the talk, which was the, I forget which telescope array, and their goal was like, Breakthrough Listen, I think, they decided they were going to aim their radio telescopes at it and saying, you know what? Just for giggles, let's listen. Let's just, you know, we know we're not going to hear anything, but let's go ahead and listen to this and see what we hear. And they listened to it.
Oh, I thought we had audio of it. I was all excited. Wow, Bryce is fast.
Scams
go sucks. Oh no! I told you the aliens have it out for me.
No, they didn't pick up anything. So you aim your telescope at there, right? And you get a bunch of data. A bunch of data comes flowing through there, right? So the next step is that what happens is that after that, you go parse through the data. You try to examine the data. You look for patterns. And now on the initial listen. Like, no, they didn't pick up anything. It wasn't like they picked up anything that was like, this is telling us something. But they do say there's more data to look at. So it appears it's not broadcasting any intentional signal at us that we can detect.
Intentional.
Mm.
Is there?
See, that's the weird part is for all we know, contained in there is a written copy of the Encyclopedia Galactica. But because it's printed and we haven't, you know, reclaimed or grabbed.
We have a Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or I mean, we're expecting some kind of electronic signature or something. Mm. And there's just so many different methods of communication.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, one of the, you know, the premise of 2001 Space Odyssey, or the Sentinel, which the story that the original Arthur C. Clarke story, was that they put the monolith on the moon because it's like, all right, we're going to wait until you're technically capable of coming here. Once you're technically capable of landing on the moon and finding this, then you're ready for this moment. Until then, you know, we're not just going to put it on Earth. Well, I mean, when you're monkeys, we will, because you won't know what it means. So there's been talk about, okay, if this thing revisits or we get something else like this, pardon the squeal, in the solar system, what about figuring out how to, you know, how to intercept it? You know?
Yeah.
It'd be hard because this thing's going fast, real, real, real fast.
So realistically, I don't even know what you would do. I mean, you could use essentially a reverse mass driver, right? So a mass driver is if you're on an asteroid and you want to affect the trajectory, you land something on the asteroid and you just start digging up chunks of rock and throwing it off the side, and that mass, you know, will skew it off. But I don't know how you would I guess what you would do is you would get out there, do a mass driver, or you can put an object close enough that its own gravity well affects it, and you'd have to very precisely get it into close enough that it goes into an elliptical comet-like orbit. You'd have to get it real close to slingshot around some planets or something.
The using the tractor method, I mean, that's a lot of, researchers are kind of like, that's great if, you've got 90 years, in this. The hard part is just intercepting, just reaching velocity and be able to put something on there that doesn't just blow up on impact. You know, in space, it's not just a matter of going to the same point that something is. Everything's moving really, really fast. And so, we could put something in the path of this thing and have it impact it. But, if it impacts it, whatever velocity it's going at, the idea is how do you intercept it at the right speed? And so you could do Jupiter flyby. There are a lot of plans now for ideas for stuff that you could build from, the laser sails, things like that.
But yeah, well, and I can see a situation where you send a series of missiles by it, right? So they're racing as fast towards it as it's coming towards us. And then just as the missiles go past, they fire out of the missile backwards to hopefully try to match the velocity of the man, even that seems hard.
Or like landing a booster on it.
Or if you did a series of missiles, maybe each one detonates just as it's passing, and the shockwave sort of knocks it in the right orbit.
Or what is the goal you're trying to accomplish here?
The goal is, you're not going to be able to match force for force. It's got too much momentum. So I'm
Are you trying to deflect it? I was just saying, I'm just talking intercept it.
No, yeah, I'm talking about intercept it as well. Because if you knock it into the exact right threading the eye of a needle, then you could, like we were saying, slingshot around Jupiter and get it into a big, giant elliptical orbit. You know, so you'd probably have to knock it and then, 70 years later, catch it again. When it comes close back,
if you have that kind of energy, you just build a craft and get it to that speed and land on it. Same as getting on Mars. Mars is catching up with the velocity of that and reaching, changing your delta V from Earth to Mars, sort of thing, or doing like how you do an asteroid intercept. It's faster.
Could you just how much of it do we need to intercept? Because couldn't you just break it apart and maybe go after some debris?
No, we want to land on it, Bryce, and inspect it. We want to put you on.
Yeah, like we suspect there might be valuable things inside, so you probably don't want to just break it up.
Well, if you're Bryce, you want to.
It in half or something.
Here's the big question. How are we going to fund this mission? And I'll tell you what, the government ain't going to write us a check. Because I asked him. I filed a grant application.
And they said we stopped dreaming.
They said...
we no longer dream.
Strangely, it wasn't even from NASA. I got a personal tweet from Neil deGrasse Tyson saying, what are you doing? What are you doing? We stopped dreaming. Knock it off.
Well, you could help fund us by going to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Oh, that would work.
You can support the show every week here and get our sister show After Things on an RSS feed. Get it a day or two early before the rest of the public does, and it's all about being a creative professional. Check it out.
Yeah.
So do you have a plan for Oumuamua?
There, I had the platter. It was amazing. The pineapple was the best part. Yeah, there's thoughts about it, but it is that, asteroids are, meteor impacts and things like this are ways of nature reminding you how's your space program going. Mm-hmm. And seeing things like this, it's just more of a call to let's build, the tech and the capability to go out there and inspect and see this sort of stuff, because one, the research, and two, it's all fun and games until it's, the size of Philadelphia and, heading for, Calcutta. And then we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, that's neither fun nor a game.
Speaking of, so what happened last night? Oh, SpaceX landed another rocket.
first launch of 2018, right?
Yep. Oh, we did not talk about was the launch before.
That was one that.
The one in California.
Yeah, the crazy UFO sightings.
Oh, man, look at these pictures. If you haven't seen those pictures, type California UFO SpaceX, and you will see some extraordinary. I guess it was a just after twilight launch. So as a result, once the rocket got way up there, whatever clouds it makes or whatever was catching all the sunlight. And so as a result, it just has this extraordinary look. It really does look like an insane UFO. I mean, I guess it is a UFO for a lot of people.
It's it kind of flares out in a weird fine mist, but then it also turns into this sort of messy.
There's great video too. Look for the video.
Yeah.
Have you watched the video, Brian?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
We've got a little video here from Elon Musk.
There's another one watching it stretch across the side. But yeah, even this is cool.
And you could see it moving. What is the dot? Okay, so if you haven't seen it, it looks a bit like you're looking at Halley's Comet or something, in that you got a pinprick point and then a very wide tail bursting out from behind it. But there also appears to be about maybe one quarter of the way into this eye-shaped cloud, a bright spot in there. Do we know what that is, or is that an artifact?
I think that would have been a separation of the stages, I believe.
Oh, okay. So
that might have been the first.
Okay, yeah.
Wow. Man, that's what an extraordinary sight that must have been.
Well, especially if you didn't know it was a SpaceX launch, because they've become so routine.
So think about how big the moon looks in the night sky, and realize that this cloud formation, this structure, is conservatively 100 to 200 times larger than the size of the moon. Like, wrap your mind around how big that must have looked subjectively, because a video, I don't think, does that part justice. Were you able to see it? Did you walk out?
I was in L.A. Excuse me, I was in Florida. I was in Florida. So.
Oh, what a bummer.
Oh, I think this is beautiful. Oh,
so this
yeah.
This is like a time-lapse cityscape where you can see it in the sky. Wow.
Wow.
And so that's just the normal exhauster or
yeah well, there's going to be tremendous differentials in pressure that I believe are going to cause, similar to contrails, you know, airplanes at a certain height. Wow. That is just gorgeous, beautiful,
and even this like trail it leaves lingering behind. Wow,
man, what a crazy experience that must have been for everybody.
Yeah
gorgeous. Yep. Stuff. How far off are we from seeing the Falcon Heavy?
So latest plan is maybe in a week or two, we may be getting a test fire. Falcon Heavy has been put erect on the pad in Florida. They've had it upright. And then now that Zuma was the big secret payload they launched last night, and I'd be like, when's Zuma going to launch? Zuma finally launched, and that was a success. So Falcon Heavy, the plan is, Elon is now saying end of the month.
Wow. So this month, and this will be, I assume, the kind of thing that will either be catastrophic and instantaneous destruction at some point taking off, or, I mean, I guess once it gets up there, I can't think of too many big things to go wrong to aim it. Basically, once it's out of Earth's gravity well, all you're doing is just aiming it towards the right orbit of Mars and go for it, right?
Yeah, so you'll have... There's several events that have to take place. So you have the initial launch, right? And so it'll be, probably a pretty fast burn, because they're not trying to send the thing orbital. And I don't know what the trajectory is going to be, but you have the thing where they talk about max Q. You hear about we're reaching max Q, max Q, max Q. Max Q is the maximum amount of pressure that you're hitting of the Earth's atmosphere. It's that point is when the pressure of you hitting the Earth's atmosphere reaches its highest point. That is your biggest point of failure, because that's when all of a sudden, if you have a structural problem or whatever, things crush, things fly off, things deteriorate. So you have to reach max Q first. Then you've got your separation event. And here you're going to have your side booster separate. Okay. Then you have your main stage with your main rocket, your main stage. And then you're going to have your separation from there. So the side boosters separate. And a little while later, the central core is going to then separate from the upper stage. So I would say that like the trickiest point is going to be this thing going to the stability of this thing going to max Q, you know, with the two side boosters. And then after that, I think that's when the scary part's going to be, and they're going to try to bring back all three boosters.
Wow. That's that level of ambition that just makes this my favorite soap opera.
Are these are the boosters that they're bringing trying to land the same as the first stages that they've been landing this past year?
Yeah, it's just three of them.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
But of course, what a juggling act to do all three at once. And that, although their track record seems to have been pretty good for capturing those on paper,
yeah, they've been doing
no reason it can't work.
Yep. But, you know, set the expectation of like, you know, Elon's like blow up, come to Florida. You'll see something. You'll see something.
So do we want to try to be there in Florida for this, or is that schedule looking impossible for us?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
Well, keep me posted. Whenever we find out a date, because it's there are plenty of nonstops to Orlando, and then it's just what a 2-hour drive from there.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I'm all for.
That'd be great.
Cool.
Yep. We'll let everybody else know about this if we're going to be able to arrange a meetup there to do it. You know, and I have to understand that the challenge is that, you know, there may be a window, maybe a several day window. They may try to do Thursday, then it could push to Friday, and you have to go into with that expectation. You know, it's the most complicated thing in the world is launching rockets. So,
I'll tell you what though, maybe it's something that we could put ourselves down for like a week. We'll all rent a place on like VRBO or Airbnb that has good bandwidth, and we'll set up like a podcast studio so everyone can work their normal podcasting work week. And then just, we could all be on call to drop everything and run over and watch a rocket as soon as it's happening.
Sounds cool to me. Gentlemen, let's go do some picks and then we can do an after thing. Sound good?
Yeah. I got a pick I'm really excited about, and it happened in a strange way. And this maybe kind of ties into an after things topic because I thought this was good hustle on the part of the guy who did it. I got, You ever just go scrolling through your emails and you see something and you're just like, oh, I must be on this list for some reason, but it just happens to be something that is right up your alley and you're happy to click on it. In this case, I saw it was definitely like a MailChimp kind of format thing, and it just said Darknet Diaries, True Stories from the Dark Side of the Internet. And I just kind of scrolled enough to see some quotes about it, and I was like, oh, it's a podcast about Darknet Diaries. You know, sure, I'm hungry for a new podcast. Let me give it a try. Started with episode one, and holy crap, this thing is amazing. It's great. It's great. The storytelling's great. The first story is only 14 minutes long, and it's about hackers that were breaking into unprotected PBX systems. PBX systems are the telephone exchange systems that medium-sized businesses will use if they're not using voice over IP. And the way he tells the story of how simple it is to get in, you can call, let's say 7 p.m. On a Friday when you know nobody's there, and it goes to the voicemail system. You can guess what the default passcode might be. Maybe it's the last four digits of the number that you called is oftentimes the default one. It gets you into the PBX system, and then at some point you can use that system to place outgoing calls from that business. And you can use it to call 1-900 sex lines, international stuff, and because it's not the phone company that's actually charging you, it's actually the foreign entity charging you through the phone company. So by the time you figure out that you have a $25,000 phone bill, the phone company's like, yeah, literally, we don't have the money, we didn't do that. Well, we have nothing to do with it. If you have a beef, go take it up with whatever number got called. Because we have no capacity and no obligation. It's similar to calling your ISP and being mad that you got hacked. The ISP is like, yeah, we've got literally nothing to do with that. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And so only to the tune – so you got businesses shelling out $25,000 here or there. The perpetrators of this – and then there's more advanced versions.
Oh, so they would call businesses –
they would call the ones they own. Like, they own the 1-900 numbers.
And they would charge those. Oh, wow.
Correct.
I was just thinking, like, oh, well, they're getting free long distance. That's small.
No. Wow. They're calling at $10 a minute to their own phone number, basically using everyone's PBXs as ATMs. And that was a hack that I hadn't heard of. Anyway, really, really great stuff. And so after listening to four episodes, I went and I was like, how did I get on this list? And I look, and it's just from – this guy. His name's Jack R-H-Y-S-I-D-E-R. I want to say Reeseder. Jack Reeseder. Yeah, that sounds right. And I asked him, like, you know, hey, if you don't mind me asking, how did I get on this list? The show's great. Thanks for letting me know. And it turns out he was just a fan of Hacking the System.
Oh, wow.
And just and I guess had made a nice looking email that he was sending out to people who he thought would really dig the podcast. And this is a case where just that hustle exactly landed on the right target, and now I'm a huge fan. Wow. They're great stuff, great good stories.
Cool.
So just look for Darknet Diaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Darknetdiaries.com looks like it's the website. I also have a podcast pick. So I ended up watching a lot of stuff with the family over an unintentionally extended vacation. but the pick that I have today is something I found out about like 2 or 3 hours ago. I saw it on Twitter. Someone I followed mentioned it, and it's from some people who are loosely associated with Comedy Bang Bang and Absolutely Productions, and I saw the title, and I thought, yeah, I'm gonna give this a try. It's called Burger King Official Role Play Podcast.
Oh, that's amazing!
And it's a real play podcast set in a modern day. The first story takes place in a Burger King, and they're solving a murder. and it's what I'll say is, like, I've listened to a number of real play podcasts, and there's always the first episode of them is always the thing that I don't like, which is like, okay, we're going to spend an hour and we're going to tell you about our characters and we're going to give you a little bit of backstory. We're going to tell you the kinds of things that they would do. And this doesn't do that. This just like jumps right in with all these people standing in line waiting to order food at a Burger King. And it's kind of cool. It's very in media res in a way that I think other podcasts try not to be. I think, and for good reason, they're long stories, they're intricate characters, and I think this not being that, I don't know, something about it clicked for me. So that's at bkorpp.show. That's the URL to get it.
Awesome.
What about you, Andrew?
So I had the flu. Everybody had the flu this year, I guess.
And as a matter of fact, there was somebody forwarded an article saying that the CDC was saying that the flu vaccine was only 10 to 20% effective this year. Just unfortunately it mutated the wrong way.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, I posted my review of the flu on Twitter. But I got to watch a lot of TV. And I watched a lot of Hulu. Watch myself some Hulu.
Mm.
And I have two picks from there. One was, I'm like, why don't I watch Orville? Because Orville is on Hulu. And I'm like, just that, because it got renewed for season two. I'm like, you know what? I like Seth MacFarlane a lot. I am a big fan of Seth MacFarlane. I cannot stand Family Guy. I cannot make my way through an episode of Family Guy. It's not my humor. South Park nailed it. It's just this. Now we're going to cut away to this. Remember the time I was John Travolta Sharpay? You're like, there's nothing. It's people who love it. It's great. It's glad you have that. Yeah. Glad method exists too.
Well, and it was it was partially of its time, right? Like that was a funny thing for cartoons to kind of do when it first appeared. And like,
sure,
okay,
sure.
Yeah,
well, and it was also transgressive in a way that you didn't see on primetime television in that time, which is part of why it was canceled. And then only when the Adult Swim started showing the reruns did everyone be like, "How did this get canceled? This is funny."
Family Guy, but how many years did Family Guy go before it got canceled?
I want to say it was two seasons.
I think it was two, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is a long time ago. I was working my day job. This is 1998 is when it came out.
Yeah.
And then I was on the road touring, I would that was what my end of the day thing would be to throw on a couple episodes of that.
So when did it come back to Fox?
Probably a year or two later.
No. It was a long time you remember it was 3 or 4 years because the first episode they did when they came back was this amazing thing when it's like, oh, bad news, Peter, we've been canceled. And it was like, what does that mean? It's like, you're like, well, we have to make room for all this other fine Fox programming. You're like, well, is there any way we'll be back? Well, it's like, fine Fox programming, like, and then it goes into a list, an inappropriately long list of like 50 different shows, including Firefly, Keen Eddy, you know, all these failed stuff. And we're like, well, is there anything we can do? And he says, well, if all those tank, maybe we can come back. And that's exactly what happened. It was a pretty great moment.
Wow.
That's funny. Never been into the show, but I've always admired Seth MacFarlane. You know, the guy, how hard he works, everything he's done. And I find him, when I watch interviews and stuff, extremely likable person and whatnot. So when it was announced that he was going to do the Orville, I'm like, all right, it's been interesting. Like, and Ted's not my thing. And, you know, this sort of stuff wasn't there. But, like, I'm waiting for him to do something. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I like this because I like the person. So Orville got announced. You know, he's doing the Star Trek sort of space theme thing. And you're thinking, okay, like Galaxy Quest? Because I love Galaxy Quest and could certainly watch some comedy in space sort of thing. And then you start watching trailers for this thing. And you're like, this is like – very, very Star Trek The Next Generation. Well, very, very Star Trek The Next Generation. You're like, this is very Trek. Very, very Trek.
Specifically, I remember thinking like, well, I guess it's a Trek parody, but nothing about this looks terribly funny, even though it was very clear from the structure of the trailers that they were acting like...
trying to treat it as a comedy.
Yeah, it's going to be a hilarious send-up of Star Trek.
Yeah. So I watch, and I try not to go too much on pilot episodes, because with the problem with pilot episodes is that they're trying to please the network. And on the first few episodes, often there's so many different voices going in there. You want to see if something finds it sort of thing. And so I watched after I got past this, let me watch a couple more episodes. I watched a few more. And then I wrote my tweet was, once you get past this is more of an homage to Star Trek The Next Generation than wild comedy a la Galaxy Quest, it's a very earnest show with a likable cast. It's the most expensive Star Trek fan fiction ever made, and not bad fan fiction in my opinion. And that's really what it came down to. I said, this is a guy that loved Next Generation, and many people haven't seen this, by the way. I got an amazing thing. I'll have Bryce go look up in a second. He loved, you're like, MacFarlane loved Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to do a wild, wacky bunch of jokes. He wanted to do earnest science fiction stories. This is the guy that brought back Cosmos and got it on primetime television. This is how much he loves space and science fiction. There is a passion there, and I respect that. And so you start watching the show and you realize, like, the plots are not these absurd, like, comedic, which I think there's a place for that, to be honest. There could be that, but it's like, it's a planet. Like, Doctor Who is more far-fetched with the absurdity and the parody of what they do here.
And keep in mind that one of the stories we covered over on the Cord Killers podcast is that there is, in the works, a TV show based on Galaxy Quest property. It'll be a different actors.
Yeah, Tom Scheer is supposed to be Paul Scheer is supposed to be writing that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right on. Very cool.
Yeah. So anyhow, you watch it like this is like, imagine that, like, Next Generation, Paramount went in and said, when it was a syndicated show, said, all right, listen, we need to do a new show, Star Trek Universe, but it's got to be primetime. It's got to be more humor. We need to have a humor take on it. And there was a young Seth MacFarlane's like, I could do a take on this. Like, it'll still be Trek, but it's going to be a little more humorous. The crew's going to be a little more, you know, realistic, blah, blah, blah. Okay, go do it. And that's, you're watching plot lines and stuff that could have taken place in the Next Generation universe. It feels some ways dated in that respect, but it's a very earnest show. And I think if you like Next Generation, I think you might like it. I felt far more, I still haven't watched Discovery. I still have, like, not feel compelled towards that. So I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the second season.
Cool.
So this is what I want you to look up, Bryce.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane, Captain Kirk, teenage.
Okay. Or,
oh my gosh.
Fan film.
Oh. Here we go. Watch Seth MacFarlane play Captain Kirk.
He's got to be like 16. He's like, he's a kid.
Seth MacFarlane as teenager in Star Trek fan film, I assume from a billion years ago.
Watching a little crappy overlay model on looks like a backdrop with thumbtacks pushed into it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. He's a chubby teenager. He's adorable. I just want to pinch his woodchuck cheeks.
You still can.
Looks like he's using a video toaster or something from the Amiga days.
I maybe pre that.
Captain, we are now entering the temporal field.
Oh, this is great. This reminds me of when M. Night Shyamalan put a similar caliber performance as a DVD extra on one of his movies.
is waking up from being in a.
Are we sticking with this? Or are we just gonna watch the whole thing?
I gotta get his performance here.
Yeah, we gotta hear him a little bit.
Status report.
They've got like a cardboard set.
No significant damage to the Enterprise, Captain.
Sir, I lost all contact with Starfleet Command.
Spock, check the navigational computers.
That's not a bad Shatner.
Computers will not respond, Captain. Sensors? Also negative. Malfunction? None that I can detect.
That's
all
amazing.
Power levels? That's the norm. Then why am I looking at a view screen with nothing on it? Can think of only one possible explanation.
All right,
and that is
that's amazing.
Wow!
So that guy turned out ended up making hundreds of millions of dollars. Went to a network and says, "I want to." I'd love that. That would be the thing. The tape he brought in to tell the network.
I mean, I've done this before.
Well,
yeah, I've done this before.
What's great is let's say that tape immediately. Let's say he put all the heart and soul, because clearly a lot of love went into this, and then instantly that tape vanished and was never seen again. It still would have been worth it for him, because when you, even if you do a shabby job, even if you just attempt to ape something else, you're gaining valuable experience about the nature of production. I mean, there's mm-hmm. stuff that we figured out on when we took over production for Scam School that was just like, well, I don't know. I guess we got to solve this. These are things we got to figure out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You start making stuff. You know, and that was, I think, what was the most impressive about that is that clearly this guy was into it. And he was making things and, you know, it stayed with him. He's passionate about it. Now, you watch Orville and you're like the opening. You're like, this is like, wow, there's like it's like next generation opening. Here's the shot of the ship. Now the ship's going to warp away. You know, it's not the Federation. It's the Union. You know, I mean, this is like. He's not a Klingon. He's this different thing. And this robot's a Data. We're like, this is like, it's treading real, real, real close.
Well, which is part of why I think they advertised it as a send up or a parody, because I think that is a preemptive maneuver to make sure that they would be protected under parody laws. You know, that's why. That's why, you know, there's Star Wars themed pornography, and they're like, it's a XXX parody of Star Wars. Yeah.
There was a years ago, Todd McFarlane, no relation, creator of Spawn, was in talks to do a, I think for Fox, or who was it? Who had the rights? I mean, I forget which network. He was in talks to do a TV series about apes, like humans on a planet filled with apes. Sound familiar?
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And people are like, no, it wouldn't have been Fox, 20th Century, because that was 20th Century Fox had the rights to Planet of the Apes. But like, they're like, isn't this a lot like, you know, Planet of the Apes? And McFarlane, this Todd McFarlane said, well, they're not doing anything with it. Project killed. Oh, like,
no. Now
can't they say, like, yes, it's that thing. You know, you can say, nah, we're doing our own version of this, blah, 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 blah. You know, like Tarzan with apes and this, but set in the future or whatever. But once you say, nah, yeah, it's like that, but they're not doing anything with it, so who cares?
Yeah,
and
it's done. That's the end. So. Man.
Did you say you had a second?
Yeah, my other pick was, so I watched a bunch of different things and stuff hear people talk, like Legion, which I thought was great. Legion was really, really good. The other thing that I watched that I dug the hell out of was Runaways.
Runaways is very good.
I hear it's the best Marvel series, and to which I always respond, better than Legion. And then everyone's like, "Ooh, I don't know."
It's
different, right?
It's different because it's trying to be a different thing than Legion is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got caught up over the holiday on Runaways, and it's still pretty good. I am just hoping they can stick the landing. That's been my thing with the Marvel shows lately, is I don't think they've necessarily stick the landing
mm-hmm.
on some of these seasons, but you know, you have a lot of different characters. And I really love that I don't know any of the original comic book characters. So this is totally, I love that about Legion, of just like kind of going in blind.
Yeah.
Yeah. They occupy such sort of different space within kind of storytelling or whatever. And I think, I mean, Legion's fantastic. It's great storytelling. Noah Hawley is wonderful. The visuals are amazing. Runaways, I'm kind of maybe more. I mean, I've liked it more than any Marvel show I've seen on Netflix in years. Wow. I think Daredevil season 2 is still the high water mark for me, and I couldn't finish other stuff. Way better than Jessica Jones to me. That show is just frustrating. I thought the casting on this was great. And I'm like, I think if I were a teenager, I would enjoy this. And the fact that I as an adult and enjoy watching this, and I feel like the characters, the CW shows drive me nuts because characters do really, really stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I keep supervillains in my basement. Nobody's going, is this really right or wrong? You know, and here you have a bunch of teenagers going, is this, should we be doing this? And they do dumb stuff, but you're like, no, that's realistic. So,
yeah.
Beautifully shot. Very. And you look at the director's credits. Oh, that's another thing about Orville. You watch the credits. Brandon Bragg is one of the producers. He's one of the producers of Next Generation. And they've had an episode directed by Jonathan Frakes, who is, you know, number one for Next Generation. And he's actually going to be directing an episode of Star Trek Discovery. So very Star Trek thing. But for Runaways, very, very diverse group of, when I've seen directors and writers coming in to do this, which is great. Because there are some names when I see attached to stuff now, I'm like,
yeah, and same old, same old.
Yeah, and I can name another show that I tried to watch and people thought was good that I don't think is good. That's another superhero show. And I'm like, this is the same problem. It's the same names, the same people doing stuff, and it's not. So,
well, yeah. Maybe we could talk a bit about that stuff in After Things.
Yes. Gentlemen, we all good? Any more picks? We all good?
No, we're not just good. We're the best.
We're great.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.